Blog Talk Radio.
NFL with the Daily Sports Herald. In ancient times, the heralds were the messengers who brought news to the people. And just like those heralds from back in the day, we are your West Coast source for sports insight. My name is Mike Elliott, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Manish Pandya. What's cracking there, Manish?
I'm doing good, Mike. Ready to talk to the NFL, although not too good because we saw something very ugly out there on the field today.
Yes, we did. Very controversial. We thought there was controversy last week. This took it to a whole nother level. If any of you would like to call in and join the discussion, we'd be happy to take your call. Our phone number and our call-in number is area code 347-857-2335. Again, 347-857-2335. But let's get cracking on the subject. This show was all about one thing. We didn't want to talk about all the NFL today. There were two games today. We didn't want to talk about yesterday's games either. Let's focus in on the controversy. Dallas Cowboys, Green Bay Packers, a classic matchup. Everyone remembers the famous Ice Bowl. Well, this is the last time they met in Green Bay for a playoff game. Of course, everyone remembers in the 90s when the Cowboys played at home in a playoff game against Green Bay. But they traveled to Green Bay again in the frozen tundra. And what started off as a classic game, a lot of tough defense, plays, courage shown by both quarterbacks, devolved into essentially an officiating controversy. There are several key sequences in the game before we get to that officiating controversy. One sequence that Dallas will be kicking themselves for was at the end of the first half. Dallas was up 14-7, under a minute to go, and they had faced a third and short, and I'll let you take it away from there, Manish. What do you think was the error that the Cowboys did right there?
Well, again, once again, what the Cowboys have been known for in terms of their struggles over the past few years, and even in this season where they've been so successful, is seemingly a blind commitment to throw the ball on obvious run downs, even when the run is successful. On that play, we had a third and one play. The Cowboys... Romo does not catch the snap properly. For some reason, they're in a shotgun formation, which suggests they were passing, but perhaps there was a draw play called. But Romo audibles and calls another pass play and essentially doesn't catch the snap cleanly and throws, and there's an incomplete pass that leads to ultimately a field goal attempt by the usually reliable, except for the last 2 weeks, Dan Bailey, who misses a field goal, giving the Packers both good both the reprieve from not giving up any points and also the opportunity to drive down the field and get some points of their own right before the first half ends.
Yes, and they did get some points. And there was actually another sequence of that. After they settled for the field goal, Green Bay called a timeout to ice Bailey. He actually missed it on the quote-unquote practice attempt because there was a penalty there, I believe. It backed up the Cowboys. They had a fourth and six, I believe, they were left with. Opportunity to maybe go for it, roll the dice, I should say, and instead they went for the field goal again. Was partially tipped, and as you said, Green Bay went the other way. I mean, the Cowboys. Before we get to the controversy, clearly they had other opportunities and they created their fair share of mistakes, but that doesn't necessarily excuse the horrific nature of the call, which kind of tarnished a otherwise great game. Jason Garrett said after the game that one call didn't make it, and that's true. DeMarco Murray had a key fumble on what would have been a big game. Dallas had an inability. This is a big problem, I believe, with them all game. Inability to rush and put pressure on Aaron Rodgers. Marinelli, who's been great as a defensive coordinator this year, continually elected to go with three four-man rushes. And Rodgers, you know, was never flushed out of the pocket, never forced to move on that bad calf, and he had time to throw because the pass rush couldn't get to him. They were unwilling to blitz, and I think that was a big problem for Dallas because it kind of gave Aaron Rodgers a rhythm. Would you agree or disagree with that, Elimination?
Well, I think they did not get pressure on Rodgers, which was really really all the more critical, or it could have been at least that much more advantageous in this game, considering Rodgers' issues with mobility, with the calf injury. In the middle of the game, I think you could even hear, for those who were watching on television, who were watching the game, in the second half on a critical third down in Cowboys territory, you could hear Troy Aikman for Fox saying he would think that the Cowboys shouldn't pressure Rodgers because he might make them play on that play. And in fact, they didn't. They rushed only four men and ultimately paid the price with a Rodgers long touchdown pass. It seemed like they were not – the times they did get some pressure on Rodgers, and that was some pressure in the first half. It seemed primarily because Rodgers would hang in the pocket extra long. Some of those seemed like coverage sacks, honestly, or at least pressures because of the coverage. And Rodgers normally might be motivated to run through, gain the yards himself, but not having that ability kind of gave the Cowboys a defense to seem to have put him under some pressure. But even that limited pressure in the first half disappeared in the second half. Rodgers seemed to have a lot of time to throw the football and did what he has been doing all season long, probably the MVP of the league, an incredibly accurate passer, a strong arm, and made all the big plays to get his team going in the second half. And certainly the idea that you were not going to see that came from Aaron Rodgers for the entire 60 minutes in playing a kind of defense that wasn't going to get any pressure, or at least risk getting burned deep to get that pressure, ultimately was part of the reason the game was the Cowboys got burned in this game.
Well, let's cut to the chase. I'm chomping at the bit. Let's talk about the call, okay? And once again, review the situation about what happened. It was a 4th and 2, about 4 minutes left in the game, approximately under 5. Dallas goes for it. They're down. I believe the score at that point was 26-21. And they're going for it rather than kicking a field goal and playing defense. They go for it. Romo throws a bomb down the left sideline. Dez makes an incredible catch. It's ultimately ruled an incompletion based on the famous Calvin Johnson rule. So there's a few things we're going to parse out. Okay, number one, we're not going to bring you the standard media coverage that all the big corporations are providing you with. This is not ESPN. This is the Daily Sports Herald. Okay, we're not beholden to corporate interests or our advertisers. Okay, so let's cut to the chase. First of all, the mainstream media, their analysts, a lot of ex-football players, very qualified to break down strategy, very qualified to break down tactics, completely unqualified when it comes to analyzing and parsing statutory language. These guys are not legally trained professionals. They're not lawyers. They don't understand the concept of objective standards in a rule and subjective standards in a rule. So oftentimes the narrative we're getting, Manish, and I don't know if you feel the same way on this, a lot of times the analysis we're getting is that, hey, the rule is a bad rule, but the refs had no choice. They were just following what's in the rule book. I think that is
one of the big myths that we can start talking about, which is this entire notion that a lot of people who frankly don't know better but feel very confident to say about when they talk about law or rules or anything like it, that's how it works, that the law exists and we simply follow what the law says and it's that simple. When in reality we know that laws have always been, however specific you want to make them, guidelines through which there's a massive interpretive process, ultimately which through the subjectivity of the officiator or a judge in a legal setting, official in a sports setting, creates an outcome. In this case, you see after the fact, in an attempt to justify the horrific call that we're referring to, that you see a lot of efforts to imply that the law is, that there was just a bad rule, and we had to follow that bad rule necessarily led to this outcome, Some people say that's a good thing. Most people say that's a bad thing. But the suggestion is the rule is the only thing at fault, not the interpretation of that rule. And I think anybody with any kind of nuanced understanding of how things really work with statutes, laws, and things like that would understand that that's entirely not how it works in real life. And I think that's where you're going with it, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, for example, in the legal field, there's a concept called judicial review. You might have the legislature draft a bill, but then judges are going to interpret it according to the different fact situations they're presented with. Here in the NFL, they have a rule. But that rule is not so bright and clear that discretion, one's subjective interpretation of the situation does not come into play. The rule is relatively vague on two key points. I'm going to read the key sections of the law right out of the NFL rule book, and we're going to address a few situations. Now, before we even get to that, personally, I can't stand the Calvin Johnson rule. I thought it's BS and goes against all common sense. And I didn't like it when the Calvin Johnson catch arose. I think it's bad for the game, period. But I understand the notion that if something's in the rule book, you got to follow it. I think the problem with comparing the Calvin Johnson catch to this is that they're not identical situations, and that's where rule interpretation comes in. In the Calvin Johnson catch, he caught the ball in the end zone. He kind of turned around. You could argue, put his hand down to balance himself. In this, it appeared there were several stages of the Dez Bryant catch. Goes up, high points the ball, two hands. Comes down, 2 feet on the ground. At that point, shifts the ball into his power hand, just like you're taught fundamentally at the Pop Warner level when you make a catch. Catch two hands, tuck it away. He tucks away in his left hand. At that point, the ball is not moving in his left hand, and he reaches out. Now, is he reaching out to balance himself, or can we infer he's reaching out for another reason, perhaps a football move? I would say that a reasonable person, the most common natural way to interpret that, would be for that reasonable person to think he's making a football move. Why? Look at the setting. He's 1 foot away from the goal line. It's only natural to think he's sticking his arm out, not by happenstance, not because his body is losing control, but because he sees the goal line in front of him and is reaching out to try to get a score. That is a football move, which renders the rule about the process of the catch irrelevant. And I'll tell you why in a second, because I'm going to read the rule out of the rule book, okay? So this is the rule according to the NFL. The key section of the rule book is Rule 8, Section 1, Article 3, okay? And it's going to be a little dry because I'm going to read from the rule book, but this is it, okay? The rule on an NFL completed catch requires three elements. One, securing control of the ball in his hands. Okay, it appears to me that Dez had control of the ball in his hands. First, when he high-pointed it. Second, when he had it in his left hand and it wasn't moving. Second part you must have as well, touching the ground inbounds with both feet. Clearly we have that. So we've had two out of the three criteria met. Now this is the key one, the final one. Maintains control of the ball long enough to enable him to perform any act common to the game, such as advancing the ball or warding off an opponent. There's a few other scenarios they say. So I'll say that again. He also must maintain control of the ball long enough to enable him to perform any act common to the game. Now, the two key sections there are long enough. Now, what is long enough? The NFL rulebook does not define long enough. It is open, therefore, to interpretation. So this notion that we keep hearing from the refs and from some of these analysts, that they're just following a simple rule, they had no choice. Well, the rule in itself requires them to interpret what is long enough, because the NFL doesn't define it. There is a subjective element, okay? And that's, we're going to get into the problem of their interpretation in a minute. The other thing is common act to the game. Now, I would argue that reaching with the ball towards the pylon or the goal line, a common act we see in every single football game, virtually every single Sunday of the year, week 1 through week 17. So in my mind, right there is a catch, okay, which doesn't even bring into question the player going down to the ground rule, okay? Any thoughts on that, Manish, before I read the second part of the rule about whether or not that's a common move, the reaching towards the goal line?
Well, I think obviously I think you are spot on in your analysis right there. The idea that he did, yes, had possession with secured the ball in his left hand, had the 2 feet down, and yes, did he make a move? Did he have the ball long enough to make essentially an NFL move? What you see in that play is, yes, most people are focusing on the lunge, but you can even see after the 2 steps he takes with the initial establishing the 2 feet in bounds, he takes a 3rd step and launches off that foot, lunging towards the end zone, reaching with the left hand towards the pylon. Now, again, I can hear the most extreme doubters saying, look, it could look like that, or it could look like he's just stumbling and happens to be run jumping towards the pylon. It's hard for me to believe that the way he launches himself off his leg and even lunges towards the actual pylon, it is somehow anything less than a football move. But again, as you noted, the issue is not just if that specifically was a football move, but did he have the ball long enough to make a football move? And clearly he did. And the fact that it's even close suggests he did. And I think that suggests that really he did have the ball long enough to make such a move. And absolutely, as you noted, one such move being an advancing of the ball. And that's precisely what he did. I think if he catches the ball in a normal way and has no interest in advancing, his momentum largely takes him out of bounds. Instead, he's turning and lunging towards the end zone, suggesting an advancing of the ball, specific idea of what they would consider a common move or an NFL move that would be under the statute.
Right. Now, yeah, under the statute of a general catch, once he high points the ball, lands 2 feet, and then extends the arm out in a football move, if you believe it's a football move, at that point, by rule, it's a catch. You can't retroactively go back at that point. If you believe him extending the arm is not to get balance, but it's really to get your arm out to score a touchdown, a football move, you can't retroactively go back and say it's not a catch. It's a catch. At that point, once he hits the ground afterwards, he's down by contact, and the ground cannot cause a fumble. So once he extends that arm, and it's a football move, he's a runner at that point. The catch has already been made, if you're interpreting correctly. And this notion that, oh, we're just following the Calvin rule and our hands are tied and there's no interpretation, that's incorrect. You can interpret. You first have to, A, determine if he has it for a long enough time, and B, does he make a common move? That is subjective criteria, not objective criteria. Subjective that gives the official discretion to read it. Now, the second part of this thing that's important in terms of the rule book is of course the player going to the ground rule. Now, I'll read the part that's important. It says, if a player goes to the ground in the act of catching a pass, he must maintain control of the ball throughout the process of contacting the ground. Okay. Now, the key language in the statute that, again, in the statute, in the rule that is open to interpretation is this: in the act of catching a pass. So in other words, if the act of catching is still an ongoing process, not yet completed, yet to be finished, again, if you're arguing that he hasn't finished the catch, then yes, the player going to the ground rule must be brought into play. But if you're arguing that the catch has already been made, that when he lands at 2 feet on the ground and extends that arm in a football move, at that point it's a catch, well, then this player going to the ground notion never comes into play, okay? It's as if it's akin to someone catches the ball, say, you know, at the line of scrimmage, runs forward to the 10 yards to try to get a first down and dives and then fumbles. So once he starts getting possession and is making a football move, he's a runner. And Dez, in a much shorter time frame, of course, appeared to me to have a catch and become a runner once he makes that football move, that reaching out. I don't believe the player going to the ground rule comes into play. I think it's a subjective criteria, and the refs made a massive failure in their determination. We're going to talk a little bit more about this, but the one thing I want to have you address, Manish, is the fact that, unlike the Calvin Johnson case, where they ruled it a no catch, and the replay officials I believe, had to overturn that ruling in order to make it a catch, find indisputable evidence. In this case, the ruling on the field was a catch. So at this point, you need indisputable evidence to find it was a no catch. And these facts are ambiguous, open to interpretation. What type of clairvoyance and mind reading does that replay official have to have in order to determine that this is not a catch?
Well, I think what we would like to say is, I think at the end of the day, one might call it, an effort to be clairvoyant. Another way to say it is simply astonishing arrogance on the part of the replay official to make the presumption that not only in his opinion is Dez Bryant not making a football move, in his opinion he's saying that Dez Bryant is still in the process of making a catch when to normal, reasonable eyes, it seems that he has already made a catch, has made a football move, etc., as you explained. But he believes it so strongly that he can't see any other way of seeing it on the field and therefore views it as indisputable video evidence. That is not only people talk about following the light, it's exactly the opposite of what you hear a lot of these NFL talking heads doing right now, backing up the call, which is to suggest we are simply following the rule. It's actually an astonishingly creative and violent abuse of a rule to take a view that says, look, this is a rule that inherently has subjectivity in it. The common sense interpretation would suggest he has caught the ball and has made a move. I don't see it that way necessarily, and I see how I don't even see how anyone could see it any other way, to the point where this is indisputable video evidence that the official on the field is wrong. Now, again, he has to see it not only as he sees it, but that it can't be seen in some sense. It's so clear that the official is just off. We see multiple times a game, oftentimes, that a close call that might even seem to be correct or might even seem to be, if it was a 50-50 toss-up, yeah, we should overturn it. Those kind of calls don't get overturned on the field because you need a lot more than that. That's supposed to mean something, indisputable video evidence. That, at least, was supposed to be some sort of a high standard in the NFL. Unfortunately, when it comes to interpreting this rule, they didn't really choose to uphold that standard and said, in essence, we choose to have one individual's very strong subjective view of things override the on-field official's fair and subjective view of things to the point where, we're going to reverse this call. And I think that's where it's going to create problems, not just for this game, but it will be a stain both on this game and be remembered in a poor light for years to come, hopefully leading to change. But considering that this rule has been around for a while and has been misused in the past, that's nothing we can be sure about.
Yeah, you have to get there's a certain level of intellectual dishonesty here by the replay officials. You have to get creative and work very hard to lie yourself and convince yourself and trick your mind into thinking there's no catch here in the sense of how they interpreted this play. In order to come to that conclusion, you have to have the gall and audacity to essentially read Dez Bryant's mind and say that, no, he's not reaching out with his left hand to score, even though his left hand is his dominant hand. He's a lefty. He always holds the ball in his left hand. He's not reaching out to score. He's reaching out for balance. And don't mind the fact that he's only a yard or two from the end zone. And even though the ball is not wobbling, he doesn't have possession, And even though he successfully transferred the ball to his left dominant hand when it was by his right shoulder, he hasn't completed the catch. Even though 2 feet landed and the end zone's right there, he's not reaching for it. He's merely balancing it. He's not making a football move. In order to come to that conclusion, you have to ignore the totality of the circumstances of that catch, essentially. And you have to find the least likely solution. Now, it's one thing if the call on the field is incomplete, okay? That makes it much more understandable and much more reasonable because is the evidence indisputable that, you know, that it would be a catch to overturn an incomplete ruling? Well, you know, it's open to interpretation at that point. You know, people can see it both ways. But when they call it a catch, and you can see it both ways, to deem it indisputable that it's not a catch is absurd, especially considering how common it is for players to reach across for a first down, to reach across for a touchdown at the pylon or at the goal line. It's a common football move. And because it's a common football move, at that point, it's a completed catch. And this sub-rule regarding a player going to the ground does not even come into play, because he's not in the act of catching an ongoing catch. The catch has already been completed prior to that once he reaches across. It's a football move. So there's a lot of chutzpah there, a lot of gall and audacity to essentially read Dez Bryant's mind. It kind of reminds me of when we had Dick Cheney in office, and he was trying to say that waterboarding wasn't torture. And the way how he'd do it, he'd go through this convoluted, hyper-technical analysis of the definition of torture and go against your common sense rationale and try to parse it out and try to show that, no, it's really not, and try to hide behind the rules and act as if the rules were a bright line rule that, you know, could only be interpreted one way, when in fact there's subjectivity behind it. It reminds me very similar to that level of intellectual dishonesty. And it's a problem going forward. I believe the NFL needs to change this rule, and it's, you know, it's going to be a continuing problem, and it's going to affect the transparency and the way how fans view it. Any final thoughts on the call at all?
Well, I would say this. I think the disappointing thing that I see after the call is I would prefer if more people were just kind of honest about what took place from the media and from the NFL. I know I heard Dez Bryant say quite the opposite. He doesn't want to hear them say they got it wrong. But I, for one, do like it at least when somebody admits they're wrong. And this was pretty clear. And to see the NFL officiating experts and some of the other talking heads go out there and try and justify this call was a little bit of an embarrassment for the NFL, I felt, today. That was really something that lowers the esteem of the league, especially after last week. There were mistakes all around, at least last week. Although some of the exclamations of protest were exaggerated by saying that one call cost the game and things like that. But in terms of the outrage at the problem of what the officials had done in the Detroit-Dallas game, that was almost uniform. And you're not necessarily seeing it quite the same way now. Some people with some silly arguments suggesting it's kind of, you know, it's just payback to the Cowboys and so on and so forth. Whereas, you know, I don't view it so much as a simplistic idea of, you know, that's some sort of karma, when do two wrongs really make a right, and how does the NFL as a whole benefit from things that make them look bad? Again, this whole thing is unfortunate. The reaction to it is still, even in this early stage, a little disappointing, because it seems not to be the most honest one, most intellectually honest one, as you referred to, something that officials and the league desperately need to do to repair a consistently worsening image this past season.
Yeah, I mean, there are those comparisons to the Troy call, and to me, it's like apples and oranges. I mean, you wrote a fantastic article last week on that Detroit call. I think the key difference with the two plays, well, first of all, the Detroit call, the real error was not calling the holding. That was the obvious call, not the pass interference. But clearly a hold should have been called. It should have been a Detroit first down. But that was just 8 minutes left in the third quarter. And Detroit had multiple opportunities at the end. They had the ball late in the game, 2 minutes to go, and they still were unable to win it. They had their opportunities. This is a little bit different, I believe. Much later in the game, and it really takes work. Yeah, it really takes work on their part to overturn a call and find indisputable evidence on what appeared to be a play that could be interpreted either way. So I think the impact of it, was at a much different time of the game, and the effort required by the officials far exceeded the incompetent act by the officials in the Detroit game. I think this is a much more egregious incident, and one that the NFL is going to have to rectify. I think one problem is this notion of all-star refereeing crews. Keep the crews that work together throughout the regular season rather than take cherry-pick from one good linesman, one good ref, and try to put them together. I think that's a real issue, and it's resulted in some uneven officiating throughout the postseason. Let's talk a little bit about, next week's game. Seattle, Green Bay. Any quick thoughts? Who wins and why?
Well, I think at this point, you would have to say Seattle's a solid favorite. I would, absent any more information from what I've seen from the two games, Rodgers did have a great game actually today, despite the mobility issues that he suffered. But what we do know is, as successful as the Cowboys' defense has been for the amount of talent we've all believed they've had, and most people have during the season, the Seattle defense is in another animal entirely. I don't really care what they're ranked technically at one time or another. They still are the top dogs in the league when you consider defense, when you think about who is on that defense, especially in that secondary, and the way they can get after the quarterback. They are the one team who defensively can control a ball game. And Russell Wilson is the type of quarterback who consistently makes plays. He is mobile. And they do have a running game with Marshawn Lynch. Seattle is coming back into the groove that saw them win the Super Bowl last year. In Seattle, they're almost unbeatable. The one team having done so are the Cowboys earlier this year, which would have been an interesting matchup in that sense. But to that same point, the Green Bay Packers are not the same team away from Green Bay. As we knew, they were 8-0, now 9-0 this season at home. They are merely 500 away from home, one of those losses being a decisive loss to Seattle on opening weekend. Yes, Green Bay is a much better team since then, but I think Seattle gets to Aaron Rodgers, lands some hits on Rodgers, maybe hurts Rodgers a little bit more if there's any tenderness in that calf, any immobility issues by next week. It will be exploited, and it's going to be tough for over 60 minutes Aaron Rodgers to avoid taking a beating from the Seahawks enough to make the big plays that he will need to make to win that game. I see the Seahawks winning by at least 2 scores.
Yeah, I see it the same way. Unless Eddie Lacy goes bananas and just runs all over that defense, which I don't see happening. We have a much better defense that the Packers are facing. And Rodgers, the mobility was definitely limited today, and Seattle's going to get after him. And unless he's able to move a little bit better, I just don't see them winning. I see Seattle, and of course, the 12th man, how they play at home, that's always a massive factor when you talk about the Seahawks. I see them winning and pulling away fairly big in the second half, and my prediction is Seattle goes to the Super Bowl. Let's talk some Cowboys. Tough loss. By and large, the season was a success in the sense that no one expected them to go to the playoffs. They surprised everyone, played over their heads. Going forward, despite the fact that, this is a lost opportunity and chances like this are rare, is this the type of team, is this the type of nucleus that can compete in the playoffs and can contend for a Super Bowl for, say, the next 2-3 years with Romo at the helm?
Well, that's the question, really. The question being the last part of your statement with Romo at the helm, because with his history of injuries, he is getting older as well. You got to wonder if Romo will be there the whole season. Now, this season, coming off of back surgery and off a horrendous first week, you had a lot of doubters, myself included, about what we might see from Tony Romo. But he had about as good a season overall as he's had. Part of that being he didn't have to carry the offense like he's done in years past because of the incredible running game. But Romo's health is the number one key to their success going forward. That being said, they also have free agency issues with Dez Bryant and DeMarco Murray.
Murray.
Probably,
yeah.
Franchise Dez. Murray will be a free agent, so they will have to decide if they want to give him the big contract that this season has earned, or if they believe really that it's the strength of their offensive line, the three Pro Bowlers up front, that is the reason for most of Murray's success, and that somebody like either Randall or Dunbar or Nibby, another back that they pick up, can come close to duplicating what Murray has done. But they do have the foundations on offense regardless. The difficulties will be if, you know, how much the essential wear and tear and age issues of Jason Witten and Tony Romo will take effect. But they do have Dez Bryant. They do have a spectacular offensive line that's young and will be there for years to come. And they do have room to improve on defense. I think the return, certainly, probably their best defensive player is Sean Lee next year.
Assuming alone, we see the same version of Sean Lee that we saw in the past.
Definitely,
I mean, he's coming up in ACL.
You can't assume that. But certainly before that, this season, you would have probably said he was their best defensive player. And
yes,
considering that he's coming back this next season, if he's anything like he was before, and already a team that's improved greatly, you'd have to believe they will be able to compete. But certainly there was something special about this team's performance on the road that made you believe that this was perhaps one of the last opportunities, because you just don't know what Romo's health is going to give you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that line is going to be the foundation, because it is a top-tier line. And I can actually see them using another draft pick on the line next year with Doug Free being in and out of the lineup with injuries. But that line is the foundation. And with that line, you have a fighting chance. The only problem is some of the skill players are getting older. I mean, Murray, with all the touches he has, typically the pattern is when you touch the ball that much, the next year your productivity declines. So we've seen it with a lot of guys over the years, and it'll be an issue with him, although he's still relatively young. Romo, the back issues, can he maintain his health? Certainly his understanding of the game and his decision-making seem to be getting better and better, just whether he can physically, you know, have the torque to make some of those throws and stay healthy. Witten's going to be a year older, but I think at least he still has at least one more solid year in him, barring injury. And then, of course, Dez is Dez, arguably the best receiver in the game. So I think offensively they're going to be good. I think going to the draft, defense is going to have to be the key. You know, it was surprising how well this D played. You got to give Rod Marinelli a ton of credit. They were hustling. They were overachievers. And they did it with really no pass rush. I was actually surprised they didn't keep Mike Sam on the team, because that's the one thing he can specialize in. They could have maybe used some of that pass rush. But, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence showed some flashes. I don't know if they're going to bring back Spencer. I mean, he was a high price tag guy and never really became the old. We saw flashes of his game, but didn't really see the old Anthony Spencer come back. But I like the linebacking core they have. Rolando McClain was outstanding. If they can bring him back, Bruce Carter, great in coverage, good speed. Sean Lee, if he shows the old form, they got something there. And I think they finally, you know, with the corners, Skandrick and Carr are solid. I love how Skandrick plays in the slot. But they finally got some decent safeties this year and upgraded the safety play with Wilcox and Church. Those guys really brought stability in the secondary, and I think that was also big. But in terms of the offseason, you know, addressing the draft, maybe the right tackle, the defensive front four, keeping their assistants, Linehan and Marinelli. Marinelli already, there's some rumors about him going to Tampa Bay, where he used to be for all those years with Kiffin and the Tampa 2 defense. But, you know, I think they need to keep some continuity, and they could be right back. I think they have about a 2 to 3 year window to make it happen, assuming they can keep their skill guys healthy. Any final thoughts before we wrap this up on the game, the call, anything else?
Well, at this point, I mean, just to add to what, in terms of, you're talking about the Cowboys for next year, the other thing to note is, Jason Garrett has probably locked himself up to another contract. That was not something we knew at the beginning of the season. But the performance of the team this year is undoubtedly ensured that he will be seeing a long-term deal with the Cowboys. And so for a sink or swim, or you know, however you want to say, Jason Garrett will be running this team for the next few years. And if this year is an indication, that's a good thing. If prior years are an indication, Cowboy fans at least might have something to worry about.
Yeah, well, he didn't screw it up this year. Okay, he didn't screw it. I mean, he's got a lot of critiques, but, you know, this year you can't find fault. And even in the in-game decisions, I mean, last couple weeks you saw him make some gutty calls on fourth down in the last two playoff games, and they more or less turned out well. The team did not look unprepared most of the season. They overachieved. I think a lot of credit goes to his staff, Linehan and Marinelli. They changed their philosophical approach to offense with the running game. And that took guts and commitment. And I think there's some growth there on Garrett's part that we saw. I don't necessarily think it's a fluke. He certainly, it's tough to argue that he should not get another chance based on this year's performance and the way how he maximized the talent. So he will be back, and it'll be interesting to see whether this same spirit and level of team play carries over into next year, because that's never a given. In terms of the call, I think it definitely was the wrong call. And I think this notion that it's a simple rule that the referees follow is a complete farce. It's disingenuous to claim that. There's clearly subjective interpretive factors, clearly discretion required by the officials when they determine whether a catch is made or is not made. And I think the NFL is going to have a problem until they either abolish this rule or become a little bit more specific on what criteria is required. What precisely defines football move or common move? What precisely defines how long that receiver has to hold on to the ball? Because otherwise, you're just going off a hunch, a whim, that individual referee's discretion. It's going to be a problem going forward until it's rectified. For now, Pro Football Lowdown is out. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we look forward to bringing you more football news in the weeks and months ahead to come. Fall Lowdown is out.